Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Riley, Judge Werke, Judge Frisch, the Honorable Denise D. Riley presiding. Calling the case A21-0798 and A21-1064, in re the marriage of Katrina M. Rude versus Joseph D. Rude.
Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. This hearing is by Zoom, and so it's being recorded. If you would, at the beginning of your argument, please state your name for the record. You'll each have 15 minutes with 5 minutes of rebuttal for the appellant. And would Mr. Vetter, would you please pronounce your client's last name?
Sure, Your Honor, it is Rude.
Okay, I wanted to make sure that we were pronouncing it right. And with that, are you ready to proceed?
I am ready, Your Honor.
You may.
All right. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Jim Vetter. I represent the appellant, who I will refer to as Father going forward. Father is seeking a reversal and remand on a number of the court's orders. I'm going to start with the issue of custody and parenting time of the party's minor child, as that is the most important issue here. And there, Your Honors, Father's requesting a reversal and remand on custody and parenting time because the district court made a number of findings and conclusions that are simply not supported by the evidence in the record. And Your Honor, if we look at the two issues that the court focused primarily on, that being the dietary issue and then the abuse issue, the evidence is simply not there to support the conclusions and the findings that the court found. First off, with respect to the medical, the court found that the party's minor child had no special dietary needs. That simply was not supported by the evidence in the record from multiple medical and other professionals. And there's a link.
I just want to make certain that I'm clear. In the district court, it seems that both parents were seeking sole legal and physical custody. That was your client's position, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And so the hope, if we were to agree with you and it was reversed and remanded, would be that your client, instead of mother, would have sole physical and legal custody. Is that right?
And Your Honor, I'm going to focus on the word you used, which would be hope. When it comes to custody and parenting time, the district court would have discretion to order something else. But yes, that would be ultimately what we believe would be in the child's best interest.
Thank you.
So, Your Honor, with respect to the issue of the medical, there were multiple professionals who opined on this issue over a period of many years. And I start with Dr. Schreckenstein, who was the first one in October of 2016. While he didn't find any allergies, he never indicated that the child had no special dietary needs. And he also indicated that his testing was not valid for diagnosing food intolerances and that he did not have a complete history. That was followed up soon thereafter by Dr. Zajac in November of 2016, who found that the child did have a reaction to cow's milk, a level 2 out of a 0 to 3 test for an intolerance. Right there is your first bit of evidence that there was evidence that the child has special dietary needs.
Well, you're not, Mr. Vetter, you're not arguing that the evidence wasn't considered by the judge. Are you asking us to reweigh the evidence that came in from medical professionals?
No, I'm not asking this court to reweigh that evidence.
Well, here's where I struggle then, as far as your position on behalf of your client. I mean, this case is voluminous. And we have judges that had a custody trial and specifically found that neither mom or dad were credible. But the judge went on to say that appellant and his parents were far less credible than respondent. That really hurts your case because we rely on and defer to the district court in terms of making those observations. How, as a reviewing court, do you, how do you urge us to step around that and say, no, your guy was right, and that means that the district court saw it all wrong?
Thank you, and I think that's a great question. The district court didn't need to look at the credibility of mom or dad on this issue. There was all kinds of medical evidence with respect to it. And that's what I'm saying here. This wasn't a question of mom's right, dad's right. This was a question of what was the medical evidence that was presented that
would allow? But then that goes back to my initial question, which led to my second question. Are you asking us to reweigh the medical evidence? Because that isn't our role either, unless you've got some smoking gun evidence that a physician that says all the others are quacks and this person is right and the others aren't.
No, Your Honor, I'm not asking this court to reweigh that, neither is Father. What Father is asking is that this court remand this issue back to the district court to determine this issue based on the evidence that is submitted. And the evidence that is submitted really goes one way. Mother can't cite to any evidence. There's not a single professional in this case that said this child doesn't have any special dietary needs. There's not a single one. If we go through each and every one of these, the New Kingdom, they did a RAS test, and that showed positive reactions for egg whites, cow's milk, sesame seeds, almonds, and it was high for a casein intolerance. That's a protein in cow's milk. We had our neutral custody evaluator, Mindy Mitnick, who recommended that the child not consume dairy or gluten until he's been evaluated by and cleared by a neutral allergist. And this was based on her concern that she was seeing. Now, this is Ms. Mitnick was seeing evidence of these medical issues. And this, again, here's where the district court erred, because the district court said, well, the only people who see this are Father and his parents. That's not true.
Can you can you just correct me if I'm wrong? Again, I mean, I want to echo my colleague's concern about a very voluminous record that the trial court and now we have combed through. I recall reading some of these allergist reports indicating that the child only tested positive for allergies to dog dander or animal dander. And that would indicate that there are some reports in the record that do not indicate allergies to foods. Isn't that right? Isn't, or am I mistaken? Is there no expert that said that, or is there no test result that said that?
No, Your Honor, that is mistaken. There was at the Mayo Clinic in 2020, there was testing done, and that's where the peanut allergy was determined, but that was a skin test. And then the Mayo Clinic said, we need to move to the oral food challenges to now determine what, if any, other allergies this child has.
And that's wasn't there at least one result that just found an allergy of dog dander and no other allergy?
Your Honor, I'm not aware of a test that had just dog dander being the only allergy. That did come up at the Mayo Clinic. So I acknowledge that. But even after that, Your Honor, our special master, retired Judge Tanya Manrique, had gone through that issue. And even she said, it is unfortunate that our oral food challenges were not going forward, because that would have provided the clarity that this family needed, that this child frankly needs to get this resolved. Your Honors, the party's own pediatrician recommended multiple times that this child have a full scope allergy evaluation completed. And he was the last individual who spoke on this, and that was in December of 2020. So, you know, while there's a lot of evidence here, the evidence is laid out is all pointing one way, that this child ought to have this issue resolved. And he ought to have it resolved for his benefit. As I said earlier, this isn't...
So counsel, you've talked about the issues with regard to the allergy. I want to turn your attention to the district court's order, which is the amended order is almost 90 pages. Is there a paragraph in this order with factual findings that you can point to that are not based in any testimony or evidence in the record? And I'm not talking about testimony that you disagree with, but just any testimony. I'm looking for clearly erroneous factual findings. And I didn't see that identified by number in your brief. So if that would be helpful, if you could tell us that.
Sure, Your Honor. And I apologize, I don't have that delineated out, but there are multiple conclusions throughout, multiple orders here from the district court, where the district court finds that this child has no special dietary needs, that Father and his family were the only ones who saw that.
So I think we've heard, you know, I understand your position that the finding that there was no special dietary needs is clearly erroneous. Are there other findings that you're referencing that have zero support in the record?
Your Honor, the other issue, and this was the other big issue that the court had focused on, and that really is the abuse issue. And here, the district court found that there was no abuse and that the allegations were false.
And I think that's based on five CPS valuations. So there is evidence in the record that supports the district court's finding of no abuse. And I understand that your client disagrees with that finding, but there is evidence to support it.
Well,
yes.
I disagree with that. I respectfully disagree with that. What CPS determined was that the abuse allegations were unfounded. Unfounded is different than false. False means that you've made this up out of whole cloth. Unfounded means you couldn't get to a preponderance of the evidence standard.
We have the fifth evaluation by CPS, which was initiated by the agency for what it considered to be false allegations that were propagated by your client.
Sure, Your Honor. And
so again, there is some basis in the record. I understand that you disagree with it, but our role isn't to reweigh the evidence as long as there's some basis in the record for the district court's finding.
Sure, Your Honor. And with respect to that issue in particular, because now we're talking about the juvenile court here. The juvenile court addressed this issue. That's where that petition came from with respect to CPS and the county attorney. And ultimately, the juvenile court did not make any finding of maltreatment or that these were false allegations. In fact, what the juvenile court did is returned the parties to an equal parenting time schedule. And that is what the juvenile court did. So just a couple of things on that, Your Honor, because I want to make sure that we're clear. CPS determined that these allegations were unfounded, not that they were false. That's a big difference. Two, the party's neutral custody evaluator determined that there had been no coaching by father or his family to report abuse, and father was not alleging abuse to gain an advantage in the custody trial. The other expert who testified on this, which was Dr. Michael Shea, it testified there was no coaching. So what the district court primarily relied upon was a play therapist who shouldn't have had any role in this trial, given that there was a safe harbor that precluded her from presenting any evidence. And notably, Your Honors, neither attorney presented any evidence at this trial from the play therapist, recognizing that the play therapist's notes would have been excluded by the safe harbor. It was the district court that sua sponte then put that in and then relied on that to determine, well, if the play therapist didn't determine that abuse happened, then abuse didn't happen. And that's not the role of the play therapist. The play therapist doesn't determine whether abuse happened or not. That is not their role. And in fact, we had Ms. Mitnick and Dr. Shea testify on that issue. So
counsel, let me just go back to my original question. So I understand that you're arguing that the findings by the district court regarding the dietary needs of the child and also the allegations of sexual abuse were erroneous. Are there any other findings that you are claiming that the district court made that are unsupported by any evidence in the record?
Your Honors, it focuses on those two issues as we're looking at that clear error standard with respect to the findings. We've taken issue with some of the other findings with respect to the best interest analysis from the standpoint that the court didn't look or address the evidence, and on some pretty significant issues. I mean, mother's mental health being one of them, where there were signs of a personality disorder and an antisocial disorder traits. And the psychologist who testified said these are the worst disorders that a parent can have for parenting. And it was mother who had kept the psychologist from being able to complete the full evaluation on that. But the district court didn't address any of these concerns. And these were significant concerns that were raised in the psychological evaluation about mother's ability to parent, how she would use the kids.
But I think that it was, the judge did address it when he was looking at factor five in his analysis.
Your Honor, I think he did a very cursory view of it, but he didn't address the antisocial and the personality disorder traits and the impact that that has on it. And here in particular, where there was a mother who had actually followed through with the examples of what the psychologist indicated she would do, for instance, threatening to abort the minor child that we're talking about, unless father agreed to her financial demands. admitting to the party's neutral custody evaluator that she would use her children as tools to get what she wanted. There were very significant concerns with her mental health that impacted her ability to parent, but you wouldn't know that because the court never addressed any of that. And while I can understand that a court may disagree with an expert, the court at least needs to address these very significant issues. But for that, we're putting children at risk.
Well, the court did find that your client shows no signs of letting go of his uncompromising ways, and this will always work to Wyatt's detriment. He did look at, he weighed the parents' various psychological profiles and found that that factor favored the mother, not your client, because of how your client had behaved throughout this litigation.
Sure, and I know I've only got a few seconds left here, but real quick on that, the district court kept coming back to its erroneous conclusion on the dietary issue to reach that conclusion, and I say I'm out of time.
Thank you, and you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for mother.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Beth Barbosa, and I am representing the respondent mother in this proceeding. This, Your Honor, has been a almost five and a half year litigation case that started in September of 2016 with Mr. Vetter's client's parents starting a third party custody action, which then, Your Honors, my client filed a petition for divorce. This has been a long case surrounding the issues of one, dietary issues, and two, the abuse allegations. And at no time, Your Honor, has the court found that the allegations are corroborated by evidence. And after several CPS investigations. Mr. Vetter would like the court to believe that just because they're unfounded doesn't mean that abuse didn't happen. However, I think, Your Honor, that if you look through the voluminous evidence in this case, there is time in and time again that the CPS found and stated that the evidence was not corroborated, that it appeared that the minor child was potentially being coached. And after approximately about, I wanna say 12 to 14 different reports made to CPS, and the majority of those reports were made by Mr. Vetter's client and also his parents, who the court found were very enmeshed in this entire proceeding. This court has to remember that my client, who has a income of about $50,000, has had to defend herself for the last 5.5 years against all of these allegations time in and time out again. While Mr. Vetter's client has been able to spend, I don't know what he spent since March 18th of 2020, but $1.4 million on this case. My client up to that point had not spent that. To say that she even spent half of that is not even accurate. My client has had some attorney's fees awarded, but basically I have carried on this litigation for her without getting paid throughout the proceeding, except for a few times by Mr. Vetter's client, because it was court ordered. Mr. Vetter would like the court to believe that there's no evidence in the record that supports what the court had found. And I would respectfully disagree. I think the court this morning has already asked Mr. Vetter and pointed out that there is evidence to support that the district court came to the conclusion that Wyatt does not have any dietary special needs. And it's not based, Your Honor, just on Mindy Mitnick's report or the doctor's reports. But also, if the court looks at the history of this case, we didn't stop after the amended order. This case has now had several litigation and motion hearings because of Mr. Vedder's client's continuous harassing behavior and continued belief that my client is sexually abusing and harming the minor child, and that her non-joint children continue to do that. We've had a hearing on January 7th regarding this of 2020. We had another hearing on May 4th of 2020 regarding these same issues. And now, Your Honor, we've had evidentiary hearing on a change of custody back just recently in January of 2022, which the court has, you know, awarded my client continued sole legal, sole physical custody, and has put Mr. Vedder's client's parenting time is supervised. Mr. Vedder's client continues to make these allegations, and it's not, so I believe that the court's conclusion at the order and amended order were correct, that he has this uncompromising, the court just cited that, uncompromising ability to not be able to let go of what of these allegations. He continues to believe these allegations to the point that making, you know, order for protections on behalf of the minor child just recently back in 2021. So, which was dismissed. And again, this is Mr. Vedder's client's continued belief, and it's only his belief. We not only have the district court in Hennepin County and the CPS in Hennepin County saying that Mr. Vedder's client was wrong, but we had juvenile court, and Mr. Vedder misstates what the juvenile court did. If the court looks at the record, the juvenile court had Mr. Vedder's client on supervised parenting time. He had to do certain things to get his parenting time back. And at the end of August of 2019, he had met those requirements. And so the court, juvenile court, said, this is better for family court to deal with now than with the juvenile court. And the juvenile court didn't grant the parties joint physical custody. It simply said that it was going back to the family court and the temporary parenting schedule under the family court file. So that is what happened. It's not to say that the court terminated it and said, oh, none of this happened. Quite the contrary. The court felt that at that point in time, Mr. Vedder's client had met the requirements of the CPS plan to help the family. But, Your Honor, it didn't stop after that. Mr. Vedder's client stopped bringing the child to therapy, even though that was part of the juvenile court proceeding, that the child continued to go on to therapy. I want to address Mr. Vedder's concern that the court based this entire file and court order on the child's therapist, Dr. Garrity, who is well known in this community on child play therapy. That is just an inaccurate statement. The court did not just rely on Dr. Garrity's statement. The court relied on so much more evidence, the evidence that includes the CPS records, the evidence that included the Cornerstone evidence that included Mindy Mitnick. And again, Mindy Mitnick's report was completed in 2018 of September. And she stated in her report very specifically, which she testified at court that she never, hardly ever does this, but she said, I am making these recommendations of joint legal, joint physical custody, knowing that the district court may have other information, other evidence that might be contrary to my recommendations and taken into consideration. So her report was completed in September of 2018. What happened after 2018, of September 2018? There were several more CPS investigations, more allegations being made. That was not part of Mindy Mitnick's report. What else happened after that? This juvenile court proceeding happened after Mindy Mitnick's evaluation came out. So those are two very big things that had happened that Mindy Mitnick's report did not take into consideration, but she testified at court. She knew that there were other investigations going on. She didn't know what the outcomes were. She didn't know what the allegations were, but she knew that the court had additional information that she would not have been privy to at that time. Now, it's also important to remember that Mindy Mitnick in her, at her testimony said, look, if an individual that continues to make these allegations, continues to believe these things, and when there's evidence and when the experts are saying that it's not happening or they can't find anything to corroborate it, then that individual, that parent, should probably not have sole legal or sole physical custody of that minor child. And she also stated that she had concerns about Mr. Rude encouraging a relationship with mom, especially if he continued to have those beliefs. Mindy Mitnick also stated that in terms of the dietary needs, Mr. Vedder leaves out that at the trial, she testified and said, at the time when I did my evaluation, I didn't have any third party independent individuals to weigh in as to whether what they're observing. And at this time, she said, that is one of the reasons why I encouraged and wanted Wyatt to be in a school setting, because there would be other individuals to say, hey, is he having any reactions? Is there dietary? Just other than what mom and dad are doing. So by that time, when we had trial in 2020 of February through January, by that time, the child had been in daycare. There had been independent third parties to review it. And I want to go back to the dander issue, dog dander. Your Honor, you're correct. There was a test, and that was done by New Kingdom. And it was, I think, in November of 2016, when he did a test and said, it's very high for allergies for dander. All the other food allergies were low. Now, Mr. Vedder says that there's no documentation to show or to support that the child didn't have any dietary issues. After the court in 2020, the amended order, the parties did go to, court order, in the fall of 2020, the parties did go to Mayo Clinic. And Mayo Clinic physician looked at, as part of her job, she was to review all the medical records that had been given to her by the special master. That was not documents provided by either party. The special master determined what medical records were going to be given. At that point, that physician at Mayo Clinic looked at all of those tests, past tests, one in October 2016, one in November of 2016, and one in 2017. And in her report, she says, I have reviewed all of them, and he is not allergic to any food. And then she did her own, the Mayo Clinic also did their own testing, and that came back positive for dog dander high and also peanut allergy. Now, Mr. Vedder's going to say, oh, if it wasn't but for this testing, nobody would know that he had a peanut allergy. Again, if the court looks at the findings in the from the hearing of January 7th of 2021, the district court explains that Dr. Montejo said that oftentimes a peanut allergy shows up later in life or after not having been fed it for a while, which my client had stopped giving the minor child any peanuts. And so that can create an allergy. So there, the record is replete with all the evidence and evidence to support the district court's conclusions and order. And so therefore, Your Honor, I respectfully, on behalf of my client, ask the court to deny Mr. Vedder's request for the court to remand and reverse. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Vedder, do you have any rebuttal?
I do, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honors. I want to first address this issue of father's uncompromising attitude. What was it that father was continuing to raise? It was the dietary issue. Who did he first raise it with? Prestige. Prestige had been copied on the email that was sent to mother in October of 2019, saying that this kid ought not to be fed cow's milk until he's cleared for it. That's what father was advocating with Prestige. That is what the court found he was uncompromising about. That is what the court started to take away his rights on, ultimately resulting, Your Honors, in a sua sponte contempt proceeding for a March order that wasn't incorporated or included as part of the final custody order, and which only apparently applied one way, apparently only applied to dad, because the provision in there that indicated that the child shall not be fed gluten or dairy in any of these institutions until resolved by the special master didn't hold any weight. And this issue still hasn't been resolved as we sit here today. Yet the court was raising this as an issue only with respect to father. Father was the only one who had the medical evidence that supported what he was saying. And the court then stripped him of his Appendix A rights at the same time. Completely glossed over the fact that mother didn't follow the Appendix A rights, didn't allow father to have telephone contact as was allowed. But when father would raise these things, that was just swept under the rug as though it didn't exist. Now, opposing counsel indicates that New Kingdom in September of 2017 determined that there was a potential dog dander allergy. I know Judge Fritch, you had asked about that during my initial argument. That was based on the RAS testing, and there were multiple things that were determined that this child had a reaction to, and I've already listed them, so I'm not going to list them again. But this issue wasn't something that father was simply coming up with out of the clear blue air. There were multiple doctors and professionals who supported his position. Mother still, and didn't in her entire argument, cite to one medical examiner or professional who said, this child has no special dietary needs and ought not to have his dietary testing completed. That doesn't exist in the record anywhere. The only place that exists is in the court's findings. And that's why that's erroneous, Your Honors. With respect to a couple of the other things, I touched on the CPS thing earlier, so I'm not going to do that again too much, other than unfounded does not mean false. With respect to the juvenile court, here again, what the juvenile court was looking at was a petition from the county. And I say that, it was a petition. I do petitions all the time. Attorneys do petitions all the time. That doesn't mean that they are the gospel truth of what occurred. That's why we have courts examine those things. And again, look at what the juvenile court did. There's no determination of maltreatment. If the juvenile court thought that dad was maltreating this child by pursuing these issues, then certainly that would have been the appropriate place to do it. Didn't do it. Return the parties to an equal parenting time schedule, as was appropriate at that time. So that there simply wasn't anything there, Your Honors. Now, a couple of other things that I just want to touch on in terms of the best interest factors, because I think it goes a little bit to the court's sort of attitude towards this case. I mean, here, the court has a finding that, you know, mother was supportive of the relationship with father while his father was not. I've asked in many, many trials, parties, you know, give me one positive attribute of the other parent. I think this is maybe the first case I've ever had where a parent couldn't say a positive thing. You know, our legislature asks us to look at what is the benefit to maximizing and the detriment to minimizing parenting time with a parent. And here, she couldn't think of any benefit, and there was no detriment to the child in limiting that parenting time. And that, to me, is not supportive of a relationship with the child. Father, on the other hand, testified that he did support mother's parenting time. He followed the court orders. He did what he was supposed to do. But again, you wouldn't know that from reading the court order, because the court simply didn't address this, just as it didn't address the school issue. You know, I think there's one finding in the amended order that, of course, the Blake school was the best school. But how did that impact this child's best interest? That's what's missing. That's what this district court didn't do. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. The case was fully briefed and argued and is now submitted. Thank you to both counsel.
Thank you.